Friday, December 14, 2007. Study class on the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2 continued. Verse number 17 reviewed. Verses number 18 through read and explained by Swami Yogatmananda at the Vedanta Society of Providence, Rhode Island.
Krishnam smayamanamukhambujam pitambaradharam nilam malyachandanabhushitam radhachittachakorendum Saundarya sumahodadhim parat parataram devam brahmananda kripanidhim om parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Grathitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusandadhami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshinim So we are following the teachings of the great compassionate mother, Bhagavad Gita, the song of the divine. And as it is mentioned in this verse that we chanted just now, that this mother hates the bondage that we are caught in, and thus will break the bondage and make us free, liberated. That is the job of Bhagavad Gita, to get rid of the bondage and consequent sufferings. And how does it do it? By penetratively and looking at our experience. Bhagavad Gita tells us that look at our experience not superficially but penetratively, like a scientist. Scientist and common person, they have this difference. A common person takes the superficial appearance as real. A scientist goes deeper, tries to understand the things at depth, finds out what actually underlies the appearance. And thus, the life gets based on what is real rather than what is apparent. The appearances, as we see, are deceptive. What appears is not always true. Sometimes it is true. In our language Marathi, there is a saying that which means what appears, the reality is not like that. And therefore, people are cheated. People get cheated because appearances are deceptive. One of our school teachers, he disagreed with that. He said that if the appearances are always deceptive, people wouldn't be cheated, because they know that as the things are not as they appear. But they get cheated because sometimes the things are as they appear, not always. And therefore they get cheated. That is why we cannot make a judgment that just because it is appearance, it is true or it is false. We have to go deeper to find out the truth. And that is what we were discussing in those two very beautiful verses, that we have to find out the criterion to decide what is real and what is not real. The appearances and the truth. So, let us take a penetrative view and examine. We see, for example, a movie. So many things are happening in the movie. Are they actually there? It is the screen all the time that is appearing as so many pictures. If we take those pictures to be real as they appear, then of course the life will be different. Then we will get up from our seat while seeing the movie and try to grab the hand of somebody who is going to shoot someone in the movie. We don't do that because we know that it is only the screen is there real. And how this judgment comes? Suppose, imagine this situation, that a child has never seen a movie, has gone to see it for the first time and with one of his elders. Now say his elder father or mother knows that there is a screen and the movie is shown on that. Child has only heard that there is screen. When the child enters, the movie is already on and the child doesn't see the screen anywhere. He asks mom, "Hey mom, you told that there is a screen and on that they show the movie. Where is the movie? I only see, look at that man is seen there and a mountain is there. They are climbing the mountain and look at that the car is running from there. A river is going by that side. Where is the screen? There is no screen at all. You were telling me about screen, but I don't see the screen at all. You were not telling me the truth." Now, how can mom show screen to the child? It is a big question. That is the problem for the scriptures, really, to show us the truth, to show us the unchanging reality behind all this changing movie that is going on. We are all actually the pictures on that screen. How can the mom show that the movie is actually on the screen? The screen is the truth there. Because the difficulty is very genuine. Wherever the mother will point out, look at that is the screen, there will be some picture or the other. And therefore the child will get the impression that suppose in front of that finger there is the picture of a mountain. The child will think, "Oh, my mom is saying that the mountain is screen. Do I not know? I am not that small anymore. I know the difference between a screen and a mountain. I can't believe that the mountain is screen." So the child thinks that the mom is trying somehow to pacify him. Because how to see the screen? It is only when the movie stops. when there is no pictures being seen, when it is all still, now the movie can, that screen can be seen. Here is the screen. And then when child sees that, he is convinced. And now knows that all those pictures that he was seeing and was thinking them to be real, all those actions that he saw and thought that they were actually happening, were not real. All the time the screen alone was appearing as the mountain, as the river, as the man, as the woman, as all those actions. Only the screen was really appearing in and through each of them. All pictures were nothing but screen. In those IMAX theaters, big theaters, they create really such a scene as if you feel that it is happening right around you. You are deluded to feel that it is all very true, it is happening right there. In fact, it is written, they first you see the warning sign that the things will appear like as if they are happening right near you and you may get scared. Like a lightning sound comes and you see as if the lightning is going to fall right on your head there. It is not going to happen, but you get that sense as if it is happening right there. So, it is a warning is shown. In fact, it is told that those who have weak heart shouldn't be seeing those movies. It is a virtual roller coaster. You know, it is not really roller coaster. You are not physically moved anywhere. But psychologically you feel that you are whirling all around. So, it is, you get that impression. It appears to be so real, even though you know, as adults you know that it is all screen. It is not really happening there. And yet it is so real, so concrete. What is real? The movie stops. Everything vanishes. The screen alone. You are convinced that all that you thought to be so real was only this screen, nothing else in that was real. So, here Sri Krishna is telling Arjuna that remember, the screen never goes away. Even when you were seeing the movie, not that the screen was taken away and the pictures they were there. The screen was all the time there, whether the movie was being shown or whether the movie was not being shown. The screen is the unchanging reality. Pictures is the changing appearance of that reality. Changing appearance of the screen and the screen itself. The screen is the reality. That very screen appears sometimes as a mountain, sometime as a girl, sometime as a boy, sometime as a car, all the same screen. It is everyone, the saint also appears in that screen, appears as saint. The same screen appears as sinner. There is no two different screens for them. It is all one reality. Appearing as the God as well as the devil. There are no two realities there, no two screens. The movie that is Passion of Jesus. There all the Jesus also was the same screen. And those who were crucifying Jesus, they were also the same screen. They were. So, the reality, friends, is all-pervading. And it is unchanging. The unchanging truth that never goes away. And what is changing? What is changing? Now, let us come to the conclusion about what is changing. When you were seeing, for example, a mountain there, was mountain there. It was not there even though you were seeing it. So, that which does not exist, never existed even though you perceived it. That is what is called an appearance. Not that it was real when you were seeing it. It was not real even when we were seeing it. And the screen, the reality, that was real even when you were not seeing it. So, this is that which is real never vanishes. That is the great truth and a wonderful criterion to judge what is real and what is unreal. That which comes and goes, that which is subject to change, is only an appearance. It is a changing appearance of something that is not changing, and that not changing never goes away. So, this is how a wise man, a penetrative person would view the truth. That is why I said it requires a scientific, penetrative mind. The appearances satisfy ordinary persons. Those who want to dwell deeper, they see that, well, on the appearance, it doesn't really make sense. Let me find out the truth deeper. Appearances are contradictory. They have lot of ununderstandable paradoxes. Let me go deeper and find out. Appearances are, why the objects fall down. When I throw it, why it comes down? Paradox, why should it not go up like that? But then you dwell deeper in it. Newton saw that it is something ununderstandable at all, but we have to go deeper and discover a unifying principle there. That principle then is applicable to all different bodies in the world. Whether that body is a tennis ball or whether that body is a huge star, all have this principle of gravity. And therefore, that principle of gravity is an outcome of penetrative study. For a superficial person, this remains a riddle, but for a person who goes deeper, finds out the truth. So, we have to pierce this appearance and see what changes and what does not change. Beyond this changing phenomena is the unchanging. In the next verse that we were seeing last time, it says, avināśitu tadviddhi yena sarvamidam tatam vināśam avyayasyasya nakaschet kartum arhati. The nature of this all-pervading truth, it is that which does not go away, that which is present all the time. It was told all the time. Now, the space aspect is told. It is present everywhere also. Not only all the time, but it is present everywhere. Where is the screen in the movie? Every picture, wherever, no picture can go beyond it. The car can be seen driving very fast. It won't go beyond the screen. How much may be the speed that it can't go beyond the screen. So, all this that we see is pervaded. Yena sarvam idam tatam. that which is unchanging, that which is always present, by that this whole thing is pervaded. All this appearance, all this movie of the world, this is a big IMAX theater, you know, very big in this movie. And all of this is in and through pervaded by that principle, that which does not change, that is same, that does not go away. And that principle then is in everybody. Where is that principle? Since it is all pervading, it is everywhere. It is the principle in Vishwanath, that is the principle in Chris, that is the principle in Elizabeth. Everywhere that principle is pervaded, because it is the one principle. It is therefore in us also. So where it is the best to find out? Closest is in ourselves. That is how we say that, look, I is the same everywhere. That is our real name. We are who? If I ask him who you are, he will say, I am Vishal. If I ask him, I am Vishwanath. Who are you? He will say, I am Dorothy. I am. That is the common name. You know, that is our common identification. That is our real name. That we unconsciously give out first. Then we change our, tell our changing name, you know. Our changing name is told later. Our first name is unconsciously uttered first. I am. That is our real nature, that unchanging consciousness. And even when your name might, somebody may get the name changed. Many people out of fancy think that, no, my name should be changed, and then go to the city hall, get the name changed. But still, I am, that name never changes, you know. Other names come and go. Your parents, when you are born, they give one name. After you grow up, you feel, no, well, this name doesn't, I don't like this name. What can I do? I didn't know at that time, didn't have much choice. The parents, they gave me this name, or somebody gave me this name. Now also people keep on calling me names, but now I have the authority to change. So, it is, you go and change your name. But again, when you are asked earlier, you might be Sam, then you change it to say Phil, but then also you used to say, I am Sam, and then all you will say, I am Phil. I remain the same. Names keep on changing. When your names change also according to your profession or your appearance. So many, like one identification was given that, well, did you see that guy? No, I don't know. Who is he? What is his name? I don't know the name. He was wearing a red cap. Now the red cap then becomes the name of that person. Red cap. It is. On the airports you have those red cap services, no? Though they, in some airliners, they give you those attendants, they wear red cap. So they are called red cap service. So it is, that becomes their name. Yes, oh, red cap. So, our names change accordingly. When you go to the physician, then you address that as doctor. The doctor became the name according to the profession. You address that person, doctor, how are the things with me? Now, that person in different, this thing has different name. That his wife may not be calling him doctor at home, he won't like it. So it is, at home he has one name, Maybe his school friends are calling him by some other name. It is so many different names according to position. But one name doesn't leave you. I am. That is our real name. And that is our common name. Everybody has this same one common, permanent, unchanging name. I am. So, Vedanta says that is what you are, the Self. The whole world is nothing but manifestation of the Self. That alone is what happens to the world. When this it changes according to the nature of I. See, as I changes, the state of I change, the state of world also changes. When the I is dreaming, the world is different. When this I is asleep, again the world of this person changes. So it is the I. The I manifests like that. So that is the unchanging reality. So Sri Krishna points out Avinashi. Avinashi means indestructible. What is indestructible? What is permanent? What is real? That is, by which everything is pervaded in and through. That is what we have to practice to see. It is intellectually understanding it doesn't take much. And just a little analysis will be sufficient. This really, the truth of Vedanta doesn't take much intellectual gymnastic to understand it, because it is straightforward. It is straightforward. Just penetrate a little deep and you see that. Very simple. But it takes time and practice to actualize it, to experience it. Just as it takes very little effort to read a book on how to swim. You can sit in an armchair and maybe you can finish the book in half an hour. And then, do you know swimming? Yes and no. Yes, intellectually you have read it. But can you just start swimming right away in the middle of the ocean? Then you will go to the bottom most probably. It is, you have to practice. It is, the practicing is important. So, gradually one has to get into this habit. See the sameness. See the unchanging character. The appearances alone change. And now, we have to learn to base our life, our emotions, not on what is changing, but what is unchanging. That is the essence of all practice. Learning to live the life based on unchanging reality and not on basing it on changing appearance. That is in Sermon on the Mount, you read that beautiful imagery. Jesus says, those who pay heed to my advice, they are like the people who built houses on rock. So the storm comes and the tempest blows, the house remains there. And those who do not pay heed to my advice are like the people who build their house on the sand. Rock and sand means what? Shifting and not shifting. The sand appearance. Rock is the image of unchanging truth. So, our life is to be, the basis of our life has to be this. That is, also you can say, basis of my life. That is what is called God. Basis of life be God. So this is matter of practice. So, once we get this idea, now Sri Krishna is telling slowly how to practice. Let us look just at ourselves. it is good to start the practice right from us. It is easier to do that if you can get what you need, good quality as well as close by and cheap. Why you want to go far away to get it? Begin right by examining yourself. Antavanta ime deha nityasyukta sharirinah. So, he says, antavanta ime deha. These bodies are changing. But the one who dwells in the body does not change. The body keeps on changing. Yesterday, a lady called me. Her grandson recently born. So she said, "Oh, he's so tiny. He is so tiny." I said, "Well, you were also once upon a time just like that. Not that he alone is born tiny. You were also not born like that. You also, when you were born, oh yes, we keep on forgetting that. The bodies keep on changing. But see, the eye doesn't change." You know, she said we all accept that the body has changed, but it is all the time that my body, I, remains the same. The dweller of the body remains the same. Like you change the house. Sometime you live in one place, then after a while the circumstances or your likings tell you that no, I need a different house, a different location, so you move. But just because the house changed, the dweller doesn't change. Even when you are seemingly in the same house, the house undergoes lot of changes. Depending on the need, you make sometimes the internal change is done, arrangement is changed. Sometimes you add one room or add something else, a garage. So it is all that, you know, the changes are going on. But the dweller remains the same. So look at our bodies and the dweller of the body. The body has a dweller in it. And that dweller does not change. Antavanta ime deha. Ime means these bodies. They are antavanta. Means they are sure to change. Very change is their nature. What is body? It is just a succession of chemical reactions. They keep on going and you get the idea of the body. It is just a sequence of changing reactions. That is what we call body. And therefore its very nature is change. And what we perceive when a body is perceived, it is a changing something. And what does not change, the dweller does not change. We have this idea. Without this idea, our very life will be impossible. If we say that no, nothing is permanent, nothing is same, everything is changing, I challenge anybody to live life according to this principle, even for a week, even for a day maybe. That is an example that I like to give. "Hey Vishwanath, give me $100 and tomorrow I will return it to you." And tomorrow, well, if I say, when he asks me that, "Swami, give me my $100 you gave, told I will give back tomorrow." Say, "Who gave? The change, body change, you know, who is there unchanging? And who took and who is asking for?" You will not be happy about it at all. It is like that, you know. Although everything is changing, how do we know that something is unchanging? Because that is our firm conviction. That conviction You know, it is a very beautiful idea, very profound idea. People ask, what is the proof of something that does not change? Friends, this is putting the cart before the horses. Now, how can you show where he is? He is everywhere, is it not? He, the God, that isness pervades everything. If our mind is tuned only to the wave, and if we say, where is the ocean? How can you show where the ocean is? If you point out that, you will see some wave there, and you will think that that wave is ocean. It is not that wave, that particular wave is ocean, but that which pervades all the changing waves, and yet is beyond all of them, that you can say that is all-pervading. That all-pervading feature is now in the next verse told. God is everywhere. How can you show? So Prahlada was said, how can you show you? He is everywhere. God is everywhere. Then Hiranyakashipu, his father, the demon, where is he? He is not there. Do you mean he is everywhere? Is he in this pillar? Well, if he is everywhere, he is in the pillar as well. If you want to see him in the pillar, it is, you can find him in the pillar also. And then the story goes that he, in anger, that demon, Hiranyakashipu, kicked that pillar with great ferocity, as if to kick God. Now it doesn't have the effect on God. The effect is that you get hurt by that, and the pillar broke, and the form of God came up from there, who killed this demon. So that is the story, goes like that. But the main idea is God is all-pervading. That existence pervades all the forms. Like the screen pervades every picture in the movie. Is there any picture there that the screen is not in it? Every picture that you are seeing in the movie, all the great big action, all those scenes which sometimes cause a lot of laughter and sometimes lot of tears, all that is really screen. Screen is pervading the hero as well as villain. It is not that the screens change for them. The screen remains the same for both. The hero, same screen. Villain, same screen. The same screen for Jesus and same screen for those who killed him. The screen doesn't change. The screen remains the same in the movie. So, similarly, this truth is all-pervading. Avinashitu tadviddhi yena sarvamidam tatam vinashamavyayasyasya nakaschet kartumarhati. That avinashi means imperishable. The imperishable is that, he tells Arjuna, Arjuna, know that to be imperishable, by which everything is pervaded. Everything is pervaded by that imperishable principle. And no one can destroy, because it is existence itself. That existence can never become non-existent, because existence is its nature. Other existence appears and disappears. It is and it is not. The isness associated with a thing goes away, but isness doesn't vanish. Associated with, like the on the screen, you may be seeing one person. That person goes away from the screen, but the screen remains there. In that movie, the pictures will keep on changing. One picture will come, other go away, another picture will come, that also will go away. The whole one movie will be finished, another movie will be shown on the same screen. So, all these changes are taking place in the forms, in the pictures. The screen remains just the same. So, let us try to feel that principle. That is meditation. Meditation is learning to feel that imperishable, constant, unchanging principle that pervades all the forms. Let us think of that principle. This Vishwanath is, Chris is, Charles is, John is, Jitendra is. Now, what has changed? The forms changed. The isness is there. Isness is a common principle. The forms keep on changing. That isness does not go away. It is the all-pervading, everlasting, indestructible principle. So, instead of thinking of us as the bodies, let us think of us as the all-pervading, divine, one principle. Why should one limit oneself only in this small body? It is being in a prison. Being in a prison doesn't bring us happiness. We crave for freedom. Therefore, we all crave for freedom. Do we not? We want, all of us want freedom. Freedom struggle. Now, freedom from what? This ultimate freedom is to be free from this cage of the body. Why should we remain in this cage of the body? We are all pervading. This I is all pervading, is it not? I is all pervading. That is another beautiful way that Vedanta illustrates this principle. That if you ask somebody who are you? Then everybody will begin the answer. He will say, I am Chris. Then she will say, I am Emily. And he will say, I am Tom. And she will say, I am Elizabeth. And so what is the common thing? Everybody, the Upanishad says, unconsciously, everybody is uttering their real name first. I am I. That is our real name. Other names, they come and go. They are not our real name. Like somewhere, Lori is called one name, Lori. Some others call her by different name. They are not real names. Somebody gave the name. She will say, I am. I am. And everybody says that, I am. So, that is our real name. And that is the one real name for everyone. Because that is the truth. Just as the Jack seen in the movie. Jack is screen. Jill also is screen. And Tom is also screen. Dick also is screen. Harry also is the screen. So, I am. I am. That is the truth. That is one. We are really one. And therefore, we always become happy when we experience this oneness. When this experience of oneness is there, why we feel happy? That it is because the truth is that it is all really one. That eating a candy, Candy and you, when they become one, then you feel that happiness of oneness. It is other, two is not happiness, one becomes happiness. But in the forms you can never bring oneness. It is to understand that it is all one. See how much joy will there be. Our joy is a case, it is a state between two sorrows. How do we experience joy in this world? That now I am happy. People say, now I am happy. What is the idea of now? Means earlier I was not happy. Afterwards again I will not be happy. Between the two sorrows somehow you feel a state of happiness. Because there you got a glimpse of that oneness. So you feel now I am happy. Sometimes therefore in the Sanskrit language there is a nice word for health. When you have good health, then you feel happy. Is it not? When you have a headache, you don't feel happy. Even if you are having the most beautiful cap on your head, but it is aching, then you won't feel happy about that. When you feel happy, when you feel healthy, there is a word, swastha, means you now are established in yourself. So, when you are established in your true nature, that oneness is felt and you are then really happy. When there is oneness, it is, you see, everything is one. Imagine, think of how great will that joy be. It will not be a state between two sorrows. There will be nothing to compare with it. It is the happiness. It is the joy. There is that very beautiful way in which it is explained in one of the Upanishads. In Taittiriya Upanishad, same comes in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad also. That people decided, we are scientific people, so this Jitendra decided, let me actually measure, you know. They say there is a lot of happiness with those knowers of Brahman. They become very happy. But just very happy and all are vague words. Let us actually weigh how much their happiness is in comparison with my happiness. Then I will take decision about it, whether to do so much spiritual practice for that and get it or not. Whether it is worth or not. Let me get exact measure of how much happiness they have. If it is too much, you know, to get it, then better I am what I am fine. So, start measuring. So, you need a unit to measure. So, a unit is thought about. That unit, very beautiful unit. How is that unit? That imagine a person who is very strong bodied, all the senses are very fine, youthful, just bubbling with the youthful energy, and that person has been given this whole earth full of all the amenities and comforts and without any competition. He has been given assurance that nobody will snatch anything from you. So doesn't need to be worried that somebody will attack me. No. Suppose that person, imagine that person. That person's joy is understood to be one unit. You know. Let us take, because we have to measure big joy, so the unit also has to be big. You cannot measure the distance between the two stars by your inches. You need the measure of light years and the distance that the light travels in 1 year. That will be the measuring unit for measuring distances between two stars. If you start using your small foot rule, it will be terrible. So the unit has to be big unit, that the joy of this man. But this joy also falls insignificantly short, because after they measured 100 such units, then they came to a being that this joy, who is called Karmadeva. So that became the there are various stages, you know, as the senses go on becoming finer, your joys increase. And sorrows also increase correspondingly. That is the fun about the worldly joys and sorrows. That the more joy you get, the more sorrow also you get. Because it is only the making the nerves fine. That you make your nerves finer, more sensitive, so that you get the joy of, say, very fine, beautiful tunes. You get the joy of that. And you get the sorrow of missing them also, equally harsh. When a person who doesn't have a musical ear doesn't get the joy of the music, and also doesn't feel the agony if somebody is just screaming in a non-musical way, you don't feel that it is bad music, or it doesn't feel the ears get hurt. It is one of our Swamis, we didn't have any sense of this music. We tried to teach him that, look, here this note with a piano, this note, then next note becomes different. Does it not? He said, what is the difference? All sound just all sound the same. So it is difficult to teach music to such a person. So he is happy, you know, even when a wrong note is struck, he doesn't know. So escapes the misery of that. Escapes the misery of that. If somebody who is well versed with music, has understanding of it, has fine understanding of the ear is very well tuned, a little note here and there, immediately there is a jarring sensation. So the suffering also is high. So like that, in that example, the joy is shown, that how much 100 times of this, then that 100 times is made another unit. So 100 times of that again, another unit. Like that it goes on and on and on till it comes to a very high stage, maybe a million times or 10 million times or a billion times of the unit that we started with. That much joy. Could it still measure the joy of the illumined? The Upanishad smiles there. No, you cannot measure the joy of the illumined by such units, because your unit is only related to the appearance of joy, not to the real joy at all. It is, can you measure, see that how much how much water of mirage will be equivalent to a glass of real water? It is just appearance, you know, it doesn't get equated with it. So the joy of the illumined is real joy. And the joy that we get here is really only a reflection, only a temporary reflection of that joy. So therefore it is told here that let us shift the focus of our life. Let it be the life based on truth. We all seek joy, but if we seek the real source of joy, then only we are likely to get it, is it not? So let us tune our life to that. That is the message. We shall discuss this verse further in the next class, that no one can destroy that which really is. Any question? Yes, George?
I'm still fighting with this idea of I am. I mean, everyone in the room here has that feeling I am.
Yeah.
No matter what, you cut that tuck here and you are.
Yes.
And yet, there seems to be a you've got that symbol of Om up there, you don't say I am, but you have that I am, and yet it's not real. In other words, we identify the I am with a house, a car, or...
That is the thing, you know, you are right there, that this idea, I am, that is the central feature. Therefore, Vedanta focuses on the analysis of who am I. That is the goal of all worships. All other symbols are used for the understanding of it as stepping stones.
Well, that's a big problem.
Why?
In other words, if you ask somebody, you are, in other words, they all admit they exist, that's the basic thing, I am.
Yes.
But when you start to define it, it ends up, I am George Parker, or I am...
Yes. That is therefore to be analyzed, you know, where this I is. Then when one sees that the same I in every being, then you know you have found out the answer.
Yeah, but we're not taught that.
Huh?
We're not taught that.
We are taught that. No, that is, therefore, here we are learning this science, you know.
Yeah, we're learning it here.
Yes.
98% of the world.
Well, that is, that is how you become special, is it not? That is how George becomes special. He is one amongst thousands. Well, let them be. You cannot, it is the wish of the God, you know, that whenever they will feel the need, they will turn to it. 98% or 99% doesn't make a difference. Let us, even if you see the truth, that's good enough.
In other words, when you say to yourself, I am, you should think of God, that you are part of the universal system of God.
Not part, you are that.
Yeah, you're the Atman.
Yes. But these are all stepping stones to it. That worshipping, concentrating, you know, that these are all for the training of the system. That learning to concentrate our mind on something so that its fleeting character will get reduced, its tendencies to run towards other objects, so-called enjoyment, that will get reduced. Then the capacity to feel the real I will gradually awaken, and then one will be able to. So these are all the stepping stones for that. It does work.
Well, it doesn't work with him.
No. It does work with... It takes time, you know. It may take lifetimes. One cannot be impatient, you know, that one has to keep on doing it 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, 50 lifetimes. It is natural feeling is this, that I am Yogatmananda and staying here in the Vedanta society and is 55-year-old or something like that. So that is the natural feeling, which is incorrect. So we have to learn to separate that, you know, that natural feeling from the fleeting phenomena.
I mean, that's what Maharshi did.
Yes, exactly. That is what Ramana Maharshi did and taught. Yes.
Anybody come to the problem, you say, well, who has this problem?
Exactly. That is a very good way of looking at it. Who has this problem? And then you will see it goes away. Who has this problem? Ask, who has this problem? And then it goes away. Not that he arrived at there without any teacher. He had a teacher of a different category. We require teachers according to our level, you know. All cannot be taught in the same way. Raman Maharshi was already a very high level. If the child goes to kindergarten, cannot be taught by somebody who is giving lessons at the PhD level. They require different skills. That PhD teacher will get vexed in an hour. No, I can't manage this crying baby. So, for the crying babies, you need different type of teachers. So, we are like that, you know. We crave for so many things in life. So, we need all the different teachers, according to our temperament, we get the teacher and the teaching. Yes, Yamuna Bhai, you wanted to make a comment?
No, I wanted to kind of follow up with what George is saying, in the sense that when you bring up the snake and the wolf example, it's kind of like they say there are two requirements for that to happen, and that one is that there has to be something there, and there's not enough light. So I'm seeing all these different forms, why can't I see? Why isn't there that much light for me? And what is the something that I'm seeing?
So you have answered it really, that you are seeing God, but because there is not enough light of knowledge, you are seeing it as this body or this chair or this building and this something you like, something you dislike. And that is seen because there is not enough light of knowledge. That is what we are trying to get, you know. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarehi या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतं एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।